filed versus the one that I proposed. What you will see is it adds more red tape to the operation of state government than we have ever seen, requiring so many reports it would grind the executive branch to a halt. It includes major and massive limitations on responding to natural disasters with limits we've never seen before in state law that could require special sessions in the midst of natural disasters. So I guess 137 people trying to manage the immediate relief efforts. It includes severe limitations on additional money to house prisoners, which up until recent years, we've always had more prisoners than budgeted in our penal systems. This would require us to house them with no money for them. There are fewer public safety investments, significantly less dollars going to our public schools, and a lot of other big concerns, including a massive cut to state government personnel across the board with absolutely no study on what these positions are and how much they might impact us. I'll tell you, we'll have fewer corrections officers, and we will not be able to hire the DJJ youth detention officials that are necessary to keep them safe. So let's start going through them. Let's go to the first slide. I will say that we've put these together as fast as we can because we're about 36 hours after this was filed. So the slides won't be perfect. This is the best information we have at the moment. This is really surprising. For the first time ever, we have significant and severe limitations on what are called necessary government expenses. That's what we're allowed to use after the floods to make sure that we're getting water and other needed expenses to places that go. It's what we use to have the funds to fight the wildfires that were all over the state for a period of time. They're what we use when we have extra prisoners we're asked to house, and we have a constitutional duty to do that. So for the first time, there's a limitation. I think it's $50 million to respond to an emergency through necessary governmental expenses. That wouldn't get us through an ice storm. So if this is part of the final budget, if it's legal, that means that in any major natural disaster, you'd have to have a special session, which would be really challenging if the state is shut down due to an ice storm or other issues. I think there is a $4 million limit that we're allowed to use in necessary governmental expenses to fight forest fires. So after that, I guess either we have to have a special session or you let it burn. I don't think either are how we ought to be operating state government. There is no new funding, at least in this bill, to the Eastern Kentucky Safe Fund. That fund had three parts. It has the education part that still has money in it. It has the transportation cabinet part that still has some, but there's a lot to do there, and it just takes time to spend. The part that helps local governments, because they've had revenue wiped out with different areas wiped out, and or to meet FEMA matching requirements, we already can't fund about $36 million worth of needs, somewhere between 25 and 36 that have already been submitted, and more is to come. Remember, in Eastern Kentucky, we had $1 billion worth of damage to our wastewater and water systems alone. This would certainly slow down the recovery in Eastern Kentucky. Let's go to the next one. This budget, and I don't think this has been reported on, has a massive reduction in state personnel without any study, without any request to us on which areas are being impacted and by how much. Here's what they do. When we have a vacancy across state government, we're trying to fill it. And remember, we just had salary increases. Think about what the state police salaries went up or the correction salaries went up. What this budget does is it took all the vacancies that exist right now, and that could mean someone left a week ago, and they cut 95% of them, no longer funded, no longer exist in state government. So all these spots we're trying to fill, social workers, corrections officers, state police, you pick it. If there is a vacancy today for any reason, if they're an area that we've been told do better and we're working on hiring, 95% of all those positions wiped out. It's about $250 million worth of state employees that past budgets have recognized are incredibly important. This is just taking a hatchet and hacking at the executive branch without even looking. It's like putting on a blindfold and trying to cut something up. It's going to halt significant progress. And let me give you a few examples of exactly what it does. And I will tell you, I doubt that the drafters of this budget even know what we're going to be talking about and what we're going to be able to show, because they never asked. This was a complete and total surprise. The Department of Corrections loses over $16 million of necessary personnel costs at a time we're trying to hire extra corrections officers. So we went to the legislature and we said, we don't have enough corrections officers. We need to move the pay to $50,000. They said, you're right. We can't hire enough people unless you raise them. So we got that legislation passed. We started hiring corrections officers, and then they came in and whacked all the positions that we now have the money to actually fill that we previously haven't been able to fill. Community-based services are our social workers. We've worked really hard to get raises for social workers, and over time, while it's not happening as fast as we'd like, we're getting more and more social workers, $17 million. Most of this is DCBS, the people who help our kids that are subjected to abuse and neglect. This will be fewer people helping those. Department of Juvenile Justice, $14 million of positions that have been eliminated, not funded. This includes the detention staff. Remember, the legislature, and rightfully has said, we have to have safer juvenile justice detention centers. We're going to get to the fact they didn't fund the necessary safety renovations we needed in a minute, or the new constructions. But basically, we just got the pay increased. When I came in, it was less than $30,000. It's about $50,000 now, which means we're getting more and more applications. Yet at the time, we finally have the ability to fill those positions and create a safe environment. 95% of those vacancies are gone without the funding to ultimately hire the folks. And the Veterans Center facilities, one of the hardest things in hiring has been to get nurses for our veterans home. We increased those salaries. We're doing better. $18 million cut. A whole lot of these positions are the necessary nursing staff to take care of our veterans who we open up our state veterans nursing centers to. Let me just tell you, this will create less safe juvenile justice facilities, less safe corrections institutions. There will be less safety for kids at risk of abuse and neglect. And our veterans will not get the care that they need and that previous budgets recognized were really the bare minimum for what they should have. We will get more on this, but this is a significant, major reduction. When, remember, government is much smaller than it was 15 years ago, cut significantly back during the Great Recession, hasn't nearly grown back to where it was before, and to have a $250 million cut in services across the board without looking specifically at any specific area at a time that we have record revenues that are coming in, and again, without consulting the very people that have to take the policy the legislature passes and enact it. These cuts are debilitating and will prevent us from doing the work that is necessary. On top of that, this budget doesn't cut red tape. It adds more governmental red tape than I have ever seen in my lifetime. Let's go to the next one. Specifically, no, that's not it. It paralyzes government. There you go. It requires quarterly reports to the A&R committee in the House for virtually every appropriation in the budget. Think about how long that budget is and how many of them there are. This is basically every single division of government for everything that they do, submitting a quarterly report that when you look at the requirements, is going to be of significant length. Every group in state government we've talked to has said we will no longer be able to do work. We will be writing reports every single day about everything that we do. Now, let me give you an example. They ask, and this is the one that I understand the best, for one of these comprehensive reports for every executive order issued by the governor. It has to be in, I think, within 7 days, and updates within 30 days. And if one of them isn't in those 7 days, there's a 10% reduction, they say, in the appropriation of the governor's office. In other words, if we miss 10 reports, and you'll see how many of them would be required, there is zero funding to the governor's office. Now, we don't think that's legal, but obviously that is more red tape than we've ever seen. So let me just, before we even get to other cabinets and their reports, tell you about executive orders. These are the number of executive orders that I issue every year. And maybe they're thinking about executive orders like COVID or states of emergency. Folks, every Kentucky colonel is an executive order. In other words, they want a comprehensive report that goes through the reasons for each of these and what impacts it has on constitutional rights. We would have to issue them with every Kentucky colonel issued in the Commonwealth. It's every single executive branch appointment. It's a lot of the executive branch positions that we hire on. It's writs of elections. It's judicial vacancies. It's extraditions. It's approval of university attorneys for their legal services. Each and every one of these requiring a multi-page report every time they're issued and regular and consistent updates to them. This is the type of red tape that prevents things from getting done in government. And let me say, this isn't policy and oversight, which is the role of the General Assembly. This is direct micromanagement and attempts to penalize within that micromanagement. This isn't workable. I believe it is beyond the separation of powers. But more than that, it's going to grind to a halt people actually getting things done because of the amount of paperwork that every section and part of the executive branch would have to be completing. And remember, there are already committees that oversee all parts of the executive branch that have the ability to call people in, that regularly already get reports. These reports to the A&R committee are unprecedented. I mean, you're talking about tens of thousands of pages probably every month that would be going to them, taking massive numbers of hours out. At the time that we also lose 95% of our vacant positions, I mean, it's an unfunded mandate that will take the full amount of time of numerous state employees for all of their work. It'll be all that they do at a time when it looks like they're trying to reduce the workforce. Let's get to our public schools. Certainly, the House's proposed budget fails to invest in our public schools and public school educators in the way that we need. It has $1.1 billion less for SEEK over the 2 years. And remember, our budget had a low level of borrowing and took $0 from the rainy day fund. And still, we had $1.1 billion more in SEEK over the 2 years. And there's $1.5 billion less for the Department of Education's general fund. First thing they do is fail to do what we have to do in this session. And that is to effectuate significant teacher raises, significant raises for everyone in our public school systems. Remember, Tennessee just did this. We're already losing teachers to them. It is what's required to remain competitive. No funding for universal pre-K. I hear that some don't believe in universal pre-K, but it's the only way we can address one quarter of our child care needs, every four-year-old. It's the only way we not only get a portion of 34,000 Kentucky kids that might not have any child care coverage right now into it, but we'll open up about 4,000 federally funded slots in child care that currently have four-year-olds for younger children. Just giving a blanket investment in child care with out universal pre-K is not going to add one child care slot anywhere in Kentucky. It's not going to solve any of the child care desert issues. You got to do them together if we want to have a real impact. They still fail to fully fund student transportation. Remember, there's a law in the books that says we have to, but that's suspended, and they only fund 80%. So we don't want this to be Groundhog Day. In the last budget, the General Assembly, what they did in this budget, they said, we're going to give you more money through SEEK, and we'd really like for you to give raises to your employees. But they didn't fully fund student transportation, which left a big gap that some schools had to fill with some of the money or all the money they would have used for raises. Again, the General Assembly shorts them this critical money that they have to come up with. They have to fund their transportation needs, which will endanger the ability to do raises. It's the same mistake made last time, and they ought to expect the same result. And there's no funding for school resources like textbooks and technology, as well as professional development that we require our educators to get. No funding for the career and technical centers. This was Robert Stivers, project originally that we fully agreed with. We spent about $240 million investing in career and technical centers all across Kentucky. There are more, like the one in Floyd County, that really need it, completely left out of this budget, even though it is one-time spending. And half the funding that's needed for Friskies, half the funding that we put into our budget. Next, the version of the House's budget hinders new job growth, and infrastructure does not invest at a time when we have the money and truly can not just move forward, but sprint forward with the right investments. If you look down at the job-ready site development not fully funded, this is the KPDI program that's working so well. $100 million was in the last budget. They only did $75 million in this one. And they put $0 in the closing fund that had $100 million the last time. I can tell you every dollar of the closing fund the last time, while not yet expended, is docketed towards a project right now that, if closed, would be one of the larger projects we've had in a while. Without having that closing fund, we don't have the ability, when the company says, well, if only we had an access road, if only our sewer pipe was 6 inches instead of 4 inches, if only, dot, 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 that is what the closing fund helps us do. And it's already really limited by the General Assembly to some of the biggest projects out there. It eliminated the talent attraction program that our regional chambers came up with. I hear the General Assembly say, we've got to get more people to move to Kentucky on a weekly basis. This is how you get it done, and it wasn't funded. They only put $150 million in for clean drinking water programs. We had $500 million. I will tell you the 150 figure they have, that'll only finish the projects that have already been started with the last round due to increased costs. County judges, mayors know how important this is. Much smaller aviation grants. It went from $50 million to about $11 million. Our regional airports are gateways to our communities, critical for economic development. They create jobs in their own right. Look at the Muhlenberg County airport and the project they have there. They eliminated funding for the South Korean office. I mean, this is a place where we can be incredibly competitive, where we're seeing major investments. It's a $500,000 in a $120 to $136 billion budget, very short-sighted, and it eliminates the Everybody Counts funding, which is aimed at getting every high school senior either in higher ed or in a job before they graduate. One of the most concerning parts of this budget is what it doesn't do in juvenile justice. Let's go to the next slide. So there's been a working group that we have worked with, and what they've repeatedly said is, tell us what you need and we will fund it. This budget doesn't do it. We've talked a number of times about the fact that we need more personnel for security. And remember, we got those raises, which was good, but this budget would cut all the vacant positions we're trying to fill, so we would not have the personnel we need to keep our facility safe. But the other thing that we talked to the committee about that they agreed on is that these were built at a time when they didn't have to be as secure as they are right now. One of them where one of the juveniles used a lighter to start the fire alarm is because it was a drop ceiling with tiles, which you can't have in one of these facilities. So we asked for funding for, I think it's three or four, the Fayette County, the McCracken County, the Breathitt County facilities need some significant safety upgrades. They don't fund any of them. And then we asked for two female only facilities, neither of which is funded. What this will prevent is the regional approach that the legislature wants to go back to, because it's not safe without the security upgrades. They are meant to create separate facilities inside Breathitt, inside Fayette, for higher level and lower level. And what it'll mean is continued longer drives for law enforcement, which they have rightfully brought up concerns about. But if we don't have the dollars to ultimately do what needs to be done in those facilities to meet the mandate of the General Assembly, remember, the General Assembly says, executive branch, we want you to carry out this policy. We have to have two things. We have to have the personnel to do it, and we have to have the funding for any physical equipment or other upgrades that are needed to do it. If you limit either, you've created an unfunded mandate, and it makes it hard, if not impossible, for us to carry out what you've asked to do. A couple of things in corrections. They start here. We asked for more addiction treatment services. Right now, we have the lowest recidivism rate we've ever had. It's due to three things: more treatment beds inside corrections, better reentry services than we've had in a long time, and more second chance employment. Knowing we're doing better, knowing that that can make our community safer, we ask for more funding for addiction treatment, more funding for reentry services. This cuts both of those requests. No funds for the Kentucky State Reformatory demolition. We thought that we were all on board on this one. This was a surprise. This is the Kentucky State Reformatory's fallen down. We can't use most of it right now. It is old. It's fallen down. And we are already building at, I think it's Little Sandy. There's a Big Sandy and a Little Sandy. The replacement beds that are needed. This one, maybe they're planning on putting in the next budget. We have major renovation projects at the Eastern Kentucky Correctional Complex. This is our largest prison. We very much need those renovations. They're about keeping it operational. And we also had, I think, a very forward-looking facility that we were funding in our budget that created a job training center on site at the Eastern Kentucky Correctional Complex. In other words, learn on site near the end of your sentence those skills that will get you in a good job. We were going to own the facility. ECAMI, with the proven track record, was going to come in to run it. That's not in there. By the way, we also need $6 million for an HVAC system at the Radcliffe Nursing Home. I mean, the HVAC system isn't going to work for the veterans that are in there. That wasn't funded in this budget. We also see real cuts to health care. That's $62 million in Medicaid. So think about all the hospitals that impacts. They failed to fund the Marquee Cancer Center. I think we provide $10 million a year to that and have in the past. They didn't fund the Pikeville Medical Center psychiatric residency. They didn't fund Tim's Law, the dollars that were in there. Listen, I know people right now whose son overdosed and won't go in for treatment. This is the way that you try to get people that help that they need. Remember we talked about how our budget would make sure that relatives in the foster care system earn the same, get the same payments from the state to support those kids, and how that meant we could have more foster care parents. They did not fund that full equalization rate that we requested on that side. And then, while it is not in this slide, we had significant additional funding for nursing homes. When you take our state amount and look at the federal match, the General Assembly's failure to fund what we put in our budget would mean $550 million less for our nursing home facilities over the next 2 years. So significantly less funding in healthcare to systems that have been up here and have testified about their significant needs. Let's go to the next one. There are a lot of community projects that are really important to different areas of this state to move and to push them forward. Here are a list that were not funded from the Ashland Conference Center to the Frankfort Convention Center and the Franklin County Lakeview Park Event Center. Every Louisville project, I believe, that we had in there was marked out. The Martin County Water Project, right, where there's a great need and has been for a long time, eliminated that funding as well. These are all important, bipartisan, and the requests that have come in are bipartisan for them. These are the type of investments we've made in the past. They're one-time investments. All right, let's go to the next one. So here's a big piece. This version of the budget is significantly less fiscally responsible. What do I mean by that? Our budget used only one-time funds for one-time expenses, recurring funds for recurring expenses, but also had a small level of borrowing. The last budget that's passed, we're still in it, but the last two-year budget had the most borrowing, the largest amount of debt and new debt that we have ever seen in a budget. And this one has the second most debt. Now, that may be that all they have to pay for in this budget is the debt service, so this doesn't end up as an expenditure when they look at potential tax breaks. But let me tell you, if you want to get down a half a point in the income tax. Maybe you do this so you can hide all the money you're really spending. But if you eventually want to get to zero, your debt service is going to go up, up, and up. And what you're going to owe over time is going to become severely problematic. So if you look at the last two budgets, more debt, and again, not just each budget, but both of them together that we have ever seen. Also, next slide, we did all of our spending without drawing on the rainy day fund. I think they take about $1.7 billion out of it. There's also, as we're going through it, and we'll find more, a bunch of funny and fuzzy math. I will tell you one of them is when we look at UI, and we've talked how we had between, 90 and 95 positions eliminated in the Bevin administration and how we need them, and federal funding just ran out for a separate group that we had. So in the budget, they fund the 90 positions, but only with federal dollars, and I will tell you those federal dollars don't exist. So there's not real money there, even though it's included in the budget. State employee raises smaller than we had in our budget and do not have the compression adjustment that we had in there. We worked really hard on that. We think it's right. They want to use $1 million and get a study with three options. None of them will be better than what we have. It'll push off addressing compression that much longer. And I can tell you there's no perfect answer to it. They're just going to spend $1 million to study something that we already have the answer to. Finally, you'll remember in the last budget, we asked for repairs to our state parks. $71 million they put in the budget, but they didn't allow us to spend. At this point, I think we provided information on the room numbers we want to paint and the new chairs we need and what part of the lodge. We have an exhaustive list of what's necessary for it. They've had it. We've sent it to every legislature. The $70 million is still not appropriated for spending, even though it's part of the last budget. If we want our state park systems to be the very best, we got to be able to paint the rooms and fix the leaking roofs and take the steps that are needed as we move forward. So that is our initial deep dive into the budget. Remember, this is pretty preliminary. We're working as fast as we can. From here, our goal is going to be to try to meet with House leadership before it moves, and then certainly to meet with Senate leadership that met with us significantly last time to go over the differences between the two budgets. I will tell you, last time, the House budget left out a ton. There were a number of mistakes in it. That's what happens when you try to leapfrog the executive branch, which is always provided the first draft proposal. We have a whole huge staff to do it, and there's a reason for it. The budget got much better when it went over to the Senate, and they spent a significant amount of time with us and with their people and asking questions on it. I anticipate that it will get better in the Senate, and we'll work really hard with their leadership that I will say have been very open in meetings, in the very least, to discussions. Let us name our Team Kentucky All-Stars, and then we'll get to questions. This week, I'm naming all those who work at our National Weather Service, our Team Kentucky All-Stars. Right now, I get a briefing just about daily with everything that is coming through. These are folks that work with government officials. These are folks that work with your meteorologists. They work every day to help protect us from severe weather. It's our experts in Paducah, in Louisville, and Jackson that work hard every single day and are willing to set up a Zoom with me at just about any hour of the day so that we can get the very best information out to Kentuckians. You can tell they love their job. They work really hard at it. They give really good advice. So to all of our Kentuckians working in the National Weather Service and anybody who provides them support, thank you very much. All right, we'll open it up to questions. We'll start with Tessa.
Expressed some optimism that you might see some more favorable results in the Senate for your priorities. I mean, if you had to select certain things that you had to choose something, what would you put at the top of the list that you'd like to maybe see the Senate or the House consider?
Well, there's our priorities, and then there's some surprises in the House budget that hopefully the Senate pushes off immediately, like the blind hatchet taken to state government without any conversation or knowledge of the ramifications and repercussions. I can't imagine the Senate's going to say, we're going to go along with this and not give you enough personnel to make DJJ facilities safe. Hopefully the rest of the House won't go along with that. Hopefully we'll see amendments that do something on that. And again, I think this action was taken without knowledge of the significant impacts that it will have. I guess sometimes if you're not in the executive branch, you don't see how hard our people work and what it takes and the double shifts being pulled while we hire other people. And I will tell you, let me say something real positive about the General Assembly. The raises are working. I mean, take corrections in DJJ. It's working. We're getting more people. We're getting more applications. We're being able to be more selective. We have fewer double shifts in corrections. We are getting to a point where we were able to take more state prisoners from jails because we finally had enough people. This stops any and all of that progress. The limitations on how you respond to a natural disaster are crazy. The idea that we would just have to stop working to stop a forest fire and call a special session is crazy. I mean, those are things we need out. But when we talk about actual ways to move forward instead of to fall back, because this budget, by the authors who submitted it, I don't want to call it all the House. I don't know that they all agree with it. Not only doesn't help us move forward, it pushes us backwards. When you look at the priorities, certainly you got to look at teacher pay. And there are a couple of ways to do this. Under the Patton administration, they did it through the SEEK formula, but mandated the raises. We gave them a way to do it in SEEK, but not in the formula, where they could guarantee the raises. The last way you could potentially do it is if you fully funded everything else to come to an agreement with the school system on the raises that they would give. But on that end, you're going to have to see more funding, at least in student transportation, if we're going to have the expectation that every school system is ultimately going to do the right thing. And then, you know, they have a significant amount of money in there for childcare. We put a significant amount of money in there for childcare. It's not going to work without universal pre-K. We're going to be in the same spot we were 3 months ago, 6 months ago, and 9 months ago. We're also really going to have to figure out how to make it work, because at least the requests right now are for a replacement of federal dollars and for help in salaries. Well, these are also private sector businesses, and we don't know the profit margin. We don't in the budget, at least, there aren't requirements on enrichment and quality that's going into it. So the only way we make a real headway into childcare is universal pre-K, which takes care of 25% of it. You know, every four-year-old, and once they're five, they go into kindergarten. So again, those are important areas, but everything we went over, most everywhere where I said something wasn't in it was a program that we'd agreed to in the last budget that isn't in this budget. The closing fund, the water sewer money, and others. A lot of it's trying to continue progress that, again, the General Assembly helped us to enact and really move forward with, that they should be really proud of from the last budget that they cut in this budget. I mean, when you've created a really good program that works well, the water sewer, everybody's happy with. And that's hard. Everybody across the state and the counties and the cities are happy with. Why would you discontinue it? So there's a lot. There's a lot to work on. And the budget always changes a lot, but it's really important to get the information to you all, the press, and to anybody who's watching and keeping score at home about where our proposal was and where this one is. Rebecca.
Yes, the $1.1 billion you reference, is that inclusive of the base guarantee, or is that roughly the same in both plans?
Let me get you an answer to that from John Hicks.